Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Here we are, a week away from Christmas Eve, 2 weeks away from New Year's Eve. You want to stock up. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, you driving down 11 and 15, you can say it, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And don't forget, Brewers Outlet gift cards. You're just not sure what to get somebody. You need a solution. Well, the solution's a Brewers Outlet gift card. You get that, your problem solved, and the person that receives it, they'll love it. That makes it even better. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory. Your trade-in's never been worth more. Great sales staff that works with you. And on top of that, a fabulous service department. Difficult, routine inspections. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Our play-by-play call of the day. What should have been an easy save in soccer turns into a goal.
Keep control. Fabian Klose. Wow. Wimmer. Oh, it's gone in! Patrick Wimmer tried his luck! And by George, was that a lucky day? Because you do not get the better of Manuel Riemann all that often. Say somehow, it was Fabian Klose. Then, poked forward from Lampopoulos. And then Patrick Wimmer decides to simply have a go. And he does. But both palms there for Manuel Riemann are behind the ball. He saw it coming all the way. And somehow those fingers gave way.
Yep, doesn't happen very often, but that was a bizarre goal. All right, let's talk recruiting now. Signing day was Wednesday, 25 signees. Just saw Ryan Snyder at the field and talked to him. Sir, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, I forgot it was coaches show night. I just wanted a burger, and I realized, oh, no, it's packed. So we hung out and waited. It was good seeing you and Coach Shrewsbury and everybody else out there. The field's awesome. Recommend to anybody.
Yeah, it really is. Ryan, it's interesting. We're in a world of video all the time, but I still think, to me personally, maybe it's the old-fashioned part of me, I'm still a big believer in seeing something with my own eyes. How many of these prospects did you actually get out to see with your own eyes that Penn State's about to sign?
Okay, so let me think here. I did 33 of the past 40 some weekends on the road to some sort of camp or games. Okay, so I would say probably, oh man, there's so many guys down south. I would say at least, I mean, all the guys in the region, everybody in Pennsylvania, Drew Aller out in Ohio, the Nye Dennis Sutton down in Maryland. So probably 60, maybe a little over 70%, something like that.
All right.
But, yeah, I've been busy.
All right. So now there's obviously there's a lot of people that rank prospects. When you actually were able to see some of these guys in person, did it really match up with what you were being told about them?
Of course. Well, yeah, I would say so. I mean, definitely with those top guys.
Yes, right.
From Nick Singleton to Deny Dennis Sutton. There's no doubt that those guys deserve to be where they are. You know, Drew Aller's rise is incredible. Can't remember the last time I saw a three-star, you know, quality offers probably leaning towards Iowa State. And that's back in, what is it, you know, beginning of the year, you know, rise to where he is. And it's all just a testament to the work he has put in. You know, we saw him in multiple camps this year. And he just was good in the spring, and he got better at the Elite 11, and then he translates that into an incredible season with 4,000 plus yards passing, and all the accolades that fans know well now. And I definitely saw that progression throughout the year. Denied Dennis Sutton was hurt a little bit, of course, with his elbow surgery, but man, when he finally got healed in the second half of the year, he was excellent. I mean, causing, I think he had, it was about 20 or so quarterback hurries in, I don't know, five or so games, which is an excellent number. And Nick Singleton, I think anybody in Pennsylvania would know when you look at his stats, 6,000 plus yards rushing and 113 touchdowns, I want to say, over the course of his career. And of course, 2,000 of those and 40 plus touchdowns came just this season alone. I mean, when you look at his physical stature, from his size to his vision to his speed, there is nothing there that you can really pick apart. I mean, he absolutely deserves to be the number one quarterback, number one running back. I can't pretend I saw all the quarterbacks out there, but from what I saw from Drew Aller, it's hard to argue there's somebody better. So when it comes to the top of this class, man, those guys certainly checked out. And a bunch of those, four-star guys throughout the class certainly impressed me throughout the season as well.
All right. If I recall, he was somebody that actually had played other positions before being a quarterback. Is that correct?
Yeah. So you're talking about Drew. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe, you put me on the spot here, Steve. Yes, he did as a freshman. I can't remember what it was. I know he split time as a freshman. He actually wasn't, put it this way. This guy's rise is so impressive. He wasn't even the freshman. Not only was he not the freshman varsity starter as a freshman, he actually split time as the freshman team starter. Okay. Like all the way back, in his freshman year, of course. So, I mean, his rise is incredible. I forget his position, Steve. You're putting me on the spot, and I apologize. I want to say he was maybe a safety, but I can't remember exactly. But I will say, though, that once Drew, became the starting quarterback his sophomore year, I mean, that was everything. I mean, I will say with Bo Kribula was absolutely a safety his freshman year, mm-hmm. and then he became the starting quarterback at Central York, and it was a similar fashion. But Bo Kribula actually played safety all throughout his junior year too, and then his coach didn't play him too much as a senior. And in those key games, he threw him back there a bit, but of course he wanted to limit any injuries, things like that.
He always wanted to come to Penn State, didn't he? I mean, since he was a little kid.
Oh yeah, his mom sent me all the photos when he committed. I mean, he's been coming up to games his whole life. He's Penn State through and through. I wish I had the photo on me right now of his little uniform. Actually, I'm going to try and get that in the signing day. Thanks for the reminder tomorrow. I'm going to try and get that into some of our some of our stories tomorrow too. But yeah, Bo's been coming up here. I think it was 7-8 years old. I believe that was what his mom told me. Not coming to games every year or anything like that. But
sure.
Penn State through and through throughout his whole childhood.
I might know a little more than I let on. How about that?
There you go.
I might know a little more than I let on. All right. The positional balance of this group. And I'm talking about, you take a look at the roster all the time. How does the positional balance of this group fit with the rest of the roster?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, there's always spots you'd like to add on, especially if you can. But with the transfer portal, it's so hard, you're especially down the stretch, you're weighing top high school prospects against the film you're seeing from college prospects. And you got to set an incredibly high bar, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you can't just take someone, especially when you're watching, a top offensive lineman, we'll say, from a group of five who played well. So, if I would point to one spot that I think they really wanted to add, it was definitely offensive tackle. They pushed hard down the stretch to try and flip a few guys. Ty Chan, who's committed to Notre Dame. They worked hard on Emil Wagner, of course, committed to Notre Dame. Penn State fans should recognize him. He just committed a few weeks ago. They worked hard on. So that's a spot, that I think they would like to have added. There were some quality defensive tackles that I think that they, Derek Moore, for example, at St. Francis was someone they really pushed hard for. And look, whenever you're in the mix with an elite defensive tackle, you got to push no matter what your scholarship said you need to do. But adding, five wide receivers, that was clearly a position that they felt they really needed to add on, and they will. I'm including Christian Driver in that, of course, who could play potentially safety or wide receiver. Speaking of safety, too, that's really an important spot. We'll see where Driver ends up, but we know KJ Winston will play there. I expect Mekhi Flowers to start there. Penn State's had a few guys leave in recent months, and you know, that'll be a spot that they definitely want to add reinforcements, and they have. Tyrese Mills is expected to come in after finishing classes. Of course, he has to still another semester at Lackawanna, but he's expected to be here in the summer, and you know, he'll come in and be I think sophomore right away. Yeah, because mm-hmm. junior college guys didn't have last year, didn't count for them. So I mean, I think it's pretty good. Two quality running backs. Like I said, if they could add a spot, I think they'd like to add an offensive tackle. But aside from that, can't pick too many holes.
Ryan, in the time that you have been doing this, where you have been locked in on the recruiting part, where do you think this class is compared to some other classes Penn State's had, based on just the groups that you've watched over the recent years?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always funny. I get that. And it's hard now to say where it ranks, just because I've seen, you know, the previous classes come through, right?
You know, so you know what the result actually was.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So it's always one of those things where, yeah, you know, if you asked me back in 2018, I thought that was the greatest class ever. And don't get me wrong, it was very good. But then, of course, there were some guys who missed, and, you know, it just changes your perspective. But, you know, we think the rankings are pretty fair when you look at all the sites, Rivals, 247, ESPN, and On3. And I do think, looking back, especially at the players we were projecting, you know, I don't see any holes in, yeah, maybe some of them didn't pan out, but I completely understood at the time why that player was as coveted as he was. So right now we have this as the second best class since Franklin took over, and I really can't put too many holes in that. I will say that, you know, the top of this class is pretty good, and, you know, a couple of the guys in that 2018 class didn't pan out. So you would think maybe this has the potential to be the best class under Franklin. But, you know, if you ask me that question in December 14, 2024, I can give you kind of a different answer. But I would say, especially over the last 3 years, if you look at the On3 rankings, Penn State's had now three top 10 classes in the last 5 years. And that's very, very important. You know, if they can continue to build on that, of course, that's even better. But there's always just a solid group of four-star players. That has always been there. They always get, you know, those top 300 guys. It's all about getting those guys at the very top that have been hit and miss in times. And sometimes that's not their fault. I mean, Pennsylvania was just down in 2019, and they had to go national. And, you know, yes, they can do national, but, you know, it's just when you're recruiting against Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, and Ohio State, it's hard. So I think they you know, I think this definitely should be considered the second best class under Franklin, and it has all the potential to be the best as we see how guys develop.
So let's take another element to it. What has the transfer portal added to your job?
Ooh, stress. Is that a good place to answer?
Yeah.
Start with stress.
No, exactly. No, the amount of work that is put into it when you think you have a chance to breathe, you can't.
Yeah. No, certainly not. I'll say this. I think, you know, there was some talk last week about switching up the recruiting calendar. Steve, did you see that article?
I did.
I believe it was by Adam Rittenberg, I want to say. Yeah. And I would definitely agree with that mindset, which is basically, you know, what we see now. First off, we'd eliminate the early signing period. And I think you just go back to the normal signing period in February, and that would be it. And the thought there is, you can maybe still have the contact period, which is what we just saw, 2 weeks, coaches on the road constantly. But allowing them to sort out their outgoings and their incomings for transfers would be a massive, massive boost on relieving stress for coaches, and maybe myself a little bit, but I can't complain. The coaches are the ones with the real stress. And then, you know, then you can really, you know, put your efforts into high school players, of course, in January. So I do think that is a very wise move, just because, again, you know, Penn State's going to sign 25 players tomorrow. And that's going to be a good thing. And, you know, they're very happy with that. But you're going to have outgoings over the next 6 weeks. And you know, there's going to be, what, maybe 15% of the talent pool left. And that's going to make it incredibly difficult to hit those guys, and, you know, if you want to fill with high school talent instead of college guys. And, of course, you know, guys who are going in the portal, they're going in the portal for a reason, right? I mean, they're not the true all-star kind of player that Penn State wants. Yes, they found an Arwala Bikketi last year, but that's not going to happen every year. So, it's definitely stressful when you have to watch, what are we at? I mean, I think, what, 400 plus guys? And yeah, we know key positions, and right. You know, you can look at PFF data to tell who's really who, but It's definitely difficult to follow, especially because these guys don't want to talk. You know, they're past the recruiting process. The last thing they want to do is pick up for Ryan Snyder. So we'll see.
So now let's dovetail to the next one. Obviously, I've asked you about 2023 before. I know internally there are a couple of people internally that, as much as they love this class, they think they got a shot at even better in 2023. Do they?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that defensively, that 2023 class is so impressive. That's where I really think next year could be a heck of a haul defensively, especially in the region that's just stacked with linebackers and quality prospects. So that'll be something to watch. I would say Pennsylvania this year was a little bit higher than what PA is next year, but both classes are very good, especially when you look back to times like 2019, 2020, where Pennsylvania was down a little bit. And whenever you have a good Pennsylvania class, it's a major boost to Penn State, of course. I think all fans would probably understand that. So I think that with the way they have started and how aggressive they were in June and especially at the end of July with the Lash Bash, I mean, they have an awesome net cast, I guess you would say, of elite talent, guys who have been here 2, 3, 4 times. And that's so important. I mean, I could probably rattle off 40-plus kids who are, you know, if they're not a 4-star, they deserve another look as a 4-star, who have been to Penn State multiple times now. So that's a very good place to start. Quarterback will be a very interesting position because it's down a bit in next year. I wouldn't say maybe down a bit. It's the talent is very spread out. I mean, maybe they're arguably their top two quarterback prospects. One's in Detroit. And Dante Moore, and the other one's all the way out in California, that position. But, again, man, I'll really come back to defensively. I think next year's class could be really good, and, we'll see how it plays out. But they've done an excellent job, you know, at getting off to an early start. And it helps when you get 12 kids to commit in 41 days in June and July.
What did the presence of Mike Yurcich mean, especially in the quarterback recruiting, and what has been the reaction to Manny Diaz?
Yeah, Drew Aller's not here without Mike Yurcich. I mean, that's point blank, you know, the best way to put it. So that's incredible, and that's very positive. I mean, I think Yurcich is a major reason why Penn State's in a good position with Jaden Rashada, who, again, you know, we're talking about a kid from California who flew out to Penn State not once but twice on his own dime, you know, to come here in the summer and then again for the whiteout game against Auburn. So that's I don't want to say all because of Yurcich, because they do an awesome job recruiting as a staff, but he's certainly the main reason for that. Sutton, talk to me in a week from now, and I'll have a much better
recruiting. But to Penn State football,
monsters. I mean, it's State College, It was difficult for Penn State to get guys to come up here and visit on their own. You know, I can go back and look at a dozen or so guys that made it, and I can point maybe 30, 40 plus guys who visited Maryland because they live in the Baltimore region. You know what I mean? So that was huge, you know, knowing that, hey, if you're going to come all the way up here for a visit, you're not going to just walk around yourself. You're going to get quality time with the coaching staff. And also, that's James Franklin's strength. One-on-one, me and you, you know, with parents or coaches, of course, that's where James really excels in recruiting. He's so hands-on with these guys when they come to campus. I think it's always one of the first things that players tell me is, hey, I was coming up to hang out with Phil Troutwine or Terry Smith or whomever, and I didn't realize I was going to spend 2-3 hours with James Franklin too. So, you know, just that's always been his strength. That will always be his strength. And, getting guys here was a huge part of it. And then there's one last thing too. It's just they work so incredibly hard. I mean, I think they had guys here in June all but 3 days in that 27-day period. I can't pretend I watched everything in Ohio State and Maryland and Rutgers and all the regional schools, but I'd be surprised if they had as many guys getting up here especially for those weekday visits, at random times for those one-on-one kind of visits, as much as Penn State did. So they're just incredibly committed to it. They did a great job then with camps too. Over, I think it was 1,400 guys camped, and I think about 300 of them were already Division I prospects or become, Division I prospects with offers. So just incredibly aggressive, and, when they get guys here, they know how to sell. So that's the best way to put it.
Ryan, thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are, and appreciate you very much.
Can't wait to see you at the field again. I'll be out next Thursday. Let's do it.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Ryan.
See you, Steve. Take care.
Ryan Snyder on 3.com. Best in the business when it comes to recruiting. They do, all those guys in recruiting do a great job. It's phenomenal. I know I can't follow it. But then again, it's an NCAA violation if I mention names on the air. Anyways, I've told you 1,000 times. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, and Neil Kulong is coming up next to talk about the Steelers on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The beverage supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Don't forget about gift cards. We're down to the wire here. Brewers Outlet gift card solves your problem with the gift and makes the person receiving it happy. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Let's bring in Neil Kulong to talk about the Steelers and Titans. My friend, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
As always, it is great to be here. Thank you for having me.
This is a weird team. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I watched the Baltimore game.
True.
I watched Baltimore. They do nothing for a long period of time, and then all of a sudden a spurt. Minnesota, they do nothing for a long period of time, and then suddenly a spur. I can't figure them out.
They are, simply put, it's taking them far longer to figure out what their opponent is doing and what they can do to be successful in a game than it's taking their opponent. And at the same time, what you see in the NFL, and this has been true for the better part of 2 decades now, getting up on a team big, it really is the surest way to guarantee another team going on a similar run.
Right.
What you have is it's conflicting philosophies. When you're down 29 to rip, you're probably going to open things up offensively. You're going to take more risks. You're going to call things that are more immediate, and you're not concerned about field position, for example, when you're down by that much. So you're going to let it rip a bit. At the same time, the defense is going to play the clock more so than the opponent. They're mm-hmm. going to defend the sidelines, they're going to defend deep stuff, and they're going to allow stuff to be completed underneath. So really what they're doing is trying to sacrifice as much time as they can, run the clock as much as they can, until the other team gets inside the 20, and then you're tightening up on defense probably a lot more. Field goals aren't getting you back in a 29-0 game, especially if it takes you 5 minutes to get there. So right. You're conceding points. They're going to come back. The key difference for the Steelers in the two big epic but short comebacks that they've had lately against the Chargers and against the Vikings on Thursday was
takeaways. Their defense was able to get the ball back and continue kind of marching down the field. So they were able to increase their snap count in the second half. Obviously, that's not Minnesota's intention. They're playing very conservatively on offense. They're going to throw the ball, but it's not going. They're really not going to take risks because the last thing they want to do is turn the ball over. And if it wasn't for a great play by Cam Hayward against the Chargers, they didn't get a takeaway in that game. So the defense made the plays happen after flat out not showing up in the first half against Minnesota. That was legitimately one of the worst defensive performances I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And that includes 2 weeks ago against Cincinnati when they were down 34-3 at halftime. So you're looking at a team that is historically bad for a good chunk of the game, and then they're able to make a play or two and give their offense a chance while they're in, I don't give a bleep mode and are chucking the ball downfield and trying to make something happen. So it's not like it's good football. It's not like the Steelers are coming back to where they should have been to begin with. They put themselves into that spot. They got beat, straight up by an opponent that I think it's fair to say is probably a little bit better than the Steelers are. Not a whole lot, but Minnesota isn't a terrible team. Mm-hmm. I hated this game for them in terms of you got to play the Ravens, and then 3 days later you got to travel to a team that you don't play against very often. That's tough. I didn't think this was going to be a win anyway, and it certainly looked like it for a half. And they got a little bit more composed, and they were able to take it to the Vikings a little bit more. But in an even situation, they probably don't do that. It's just that's the way teams that are nursing a big lead are going to play. And one play got away from them, and that allowed Pittsburgh to have a shot there at the end. So we're not seeing good play from them overall. It's at best inconsistent, and they've got a lot of things they need to fix. If they have any prayer of a playoff berth, which hasn't really felt like it's been a true thing for the last couple weeks, but their division, fortunately, doesn't seem to be all that good. If they want to have any shot of that, they probably have to win 3 of 4 and all of them against AFC teams. And I don't think they're going to do that. Tennessee's a tough haul. Kansas City's a tough haul. Who knows what Baltimore and Cleveland are going to be. That's hard. So I don't know. I mean, it's really going to be up in the air for them. But in a lot of ways, it's now a four-game season. I don't think any team in the AFC North is going to win 4 straight now. So theoretically, the division's still up in the air.
How do you view the three prime rookies, Harris, Freiermuth, and Green?
It's interesting. Those three are going to be, I think, more connected on a similar plane than any other first three picks that the Steelers have made, probably in a while. And the reason I say that is because they were in very, very narrow windows. They were the player the team absolutely had to get. And in my opinion, they had to take them where they took them. There was a lot of talk. Freiermuth is probably the one I would start with because there was a lot of talk that he probably wasn't worth a second round pick. I wasn't sure of that, just really from more of a blocking perspective. If he's going to be somebody that needs time to develop as a blocker, I wanted to see probably a bit more out of him as a receiver. He's proved that wrong. I think he's exceeded expectations in regards to a receiver. His blocking isn't great. It's not terrible, though. That's great for a rookie. So you're really happy with that. You look above, probably standard expectation for your second round pick. And the reason I go with him first is because you have to look at the running back almost as this is a priority free agent for us. This guy is, From Mike Tomlin's vantage point, from Kevin Colbert's perspective, not mine necessarily, he is the guy who does everything that we needed somebody to do last year, and maybe our season finishes better. If we had that last year, we would have been better off. That's a fair statement. So it's almost like they were drafting him a year late, but for reasons that make sense. They absolutely needed a running back. And unfortunately, they're in such a position that you can't look at the position above the player with a running back. It's really hard to do that because so many of them seem to have success from other rounds. I have a problem with that, even though I tend to agree with it, because they have a running back's room full of guys that contradict the theory that you can just get a running back later. That's why they needed Najee Harris. It's great to see James Conner having the success that he's having, but one, they saw that player in 2018. This is not new James Conner. This is James Conner. They've seen it. He's just been healthy and playing in a dynamic offense. You know, he's a good football player. I don't think anybody denied that. It's a question of whether or not he's going to stay healthy. Now, I don't know if you saw it, but he got hurt on the last play of the game last night.
Right.
Whatever it is that Kyler Murray was trying to do, I'm not sure. Talk about a team that needs to go over their 2 minute stuff. It looks to me like Arizona hadn't discussed it all year.
That's okay. ESPN wasn't sure what they were doing either, so that's all right.
They told you all about it.
That's another story into itself. All right.
Yeah, we should get into that. There's been some good ones. I've had a lot of conversations with people about that. It really seems to be kind of hitting ahead with a lot of people.
Yeah.
But as far as the Steelers running back position goes, they needed Harris to come in and take those tough carries. You know, nobody in a reasonable mind, nobody could have thought Najee Harris was going to go for 5 yards a pop this year. There's no way that was going to happen. He was going to have tough sledding all season long, and that's exactly why they needed him. So, in a way, he was almost like a sacrificial lamb. But my line of thinking is now you had to fill a running back because you needed a running back. Your tight ends group now has you've bolstered this because the Steelers running backs and tight ends last season were legitimately two of the worst position groups in all of the NFL.
That's right.
They were that bad, okay? Nobody seems to recognize that. That's as much of the reason why they went after those positions in the first two rounds. And what this comes down to with Steelers fans usually is, why didn't you draft Creed Humphrey? Because now Pro Football Focus says that Creed Humphrey is the best center in the game. All right, well, first off, Steve, I'm sure you've talked to somebody about this at some point. There is a weird thing with left-handed centers across all levels.
Yeah.
They don't have left-handers under center. They just don't do that.
They don't, and that's one of the reasons why. Now, it's not this year, but you notice Belichick always has a left-footed punter.
Yep.
Right? Because the spin of the ball is different, and the same thing with a quarterback trying to get the spin of the ball with a left-handed center is different.
I get that. I do get that. Here's my question. Why did Oklahoma play him at center? He's 6'5", 300. Seems like he could handle a guard's workload, if not a tackle even.
You know what I'm seeing as a pattern that's happened in college football, Neil? Usually you'll take your best offensive lineman and you're going to put him at center. And I've seen several teams do that where a guy was playing guard and suddenly the next year he's the center. I remember Ohio State doing that, for example, with Billy Price. Right? And I've seen this over and over again where I've seen teams take a guy that was an outstanding guard and they made him a center the next year, like the keystone guy. I think that's a college thing more than anything else.
And usually what you would see naturally is a college guard getting moved to center in the NFL. But I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head. The kid from Michigan a couple years ago, he played center in college. He's a guard with the Saints now.
Yeah.
And he's doing all right. It just seems like there's a much closer connection between guard and center now than there ever has been.
Yeah,
so on one hand, I'll say this. I get the rotation issue that you have with the lefty snapping the ball. But at the same time, if you're the Steelers, were you super excited about your guard position? You know, is Creed Humphrey not a guard?
Right.
Could he not play guard at that level?
Right.
A lot of things happened there. But what we know, if we look back on it, what we're going to see is, for whatever reason, I think it's because he's a lefty, but for whatever reason, the Steelers all but ignored Creed Humphrey.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a team in the NFL that needed a center more than the Steelers did.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, Pouncey was obviously going to retire. He didn't take too long into the offseason to announce his retirement. So Kendrick Green coming in the third round, one manner of thinking is another guy, by the way, who went from guard to center, exactly as you pointed out earlier.
Exactly.
So were they that enamored with Kendrick Green? Did they really like Kendrick Green, or was Kendrick Green kind of the odd man out of a draft that absolutely had to walk away with starting level running back and a starting level tight end? I don't know, but this is going to be the question that goes on, and I think we're not really going to have the next dimension of the answer until after the offseason. are they going to stick with Kendrick Green at center? There's nothing that says you have to. I don't, you know, right. Steelers fans seem to think that Kendrick Green was drafted and signed a 12-year contract. You know, the NFL doesn't work like that. You don't need to draft anybody that has to play at that spot for 12 years, okay? It's like a three-year at most league.
Right.
You know, Colbert and Tomlin are not coaching 12 years down the line. They never have. So they're not going to now, certainly not because of Kendrick Green. So I don't know what they're going to do at center. I know that they're not getting good play from their center right now. I think it's fair that there aren't many third-round draft picks that start basically every snap for a team. Green hasn't done a whole lot of positive things.
Nope.
So I don't know if they're sold on him long term. But I also think that he is probably the guy that they had to take when they took him and they had to play him. So it's a weird set of circumstances for the Steelers, and that was really their entire offseason.
Well, if you're going to keep a guy because that's where he started his career, Larry Brown never would have played tackle. He'd been a tight end the entire time. You know, people forget he caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl against the Vikings.
Yeah.
All right, they got Tennessee this week. What do you like about the matchup, Neil? And, Neil, what don't you like about the matchup?
I don't like many things about the matchup. You know, here's the thing. I find, I'm sure you're going to like this, and a Penn State audience will enjoy it as well. I find Mike Vrabel to be kind of boorish, obnoxious. He's going to get himself into trouble doing something at some point.
Yeah.
It doesn't totally bother me, but he's the kind of guy that if a Titans team got really good over 3 years, like they won a Super Bowl and they were in contention for two others, he would be hated.
He would be impossible to live with.
Yeah. He's just not a real likable guy, I don't think. But part of that is, I have to admire the job that he's done with this team. I'll be honest with you. I said at the beginning of the year, if you want to bet money on any team regressing to a high level this season, it's the Tennessee Titans. And it's mostly because last year, Vrabel did next to nothing to fix that defense after Dean Pease retired. They were a horrible defensive team. They were embarrassing, especially toward the end of the year. He didn't do anything to fix that. He just went out and bought Bud Dupree, grossly overpaid for Bud Dupree. As much as I like Bud Dupree, that's a markup if I've ever seen one.
Yep.
You know, he's not going to fix anything for you. I had no faith in that team whatsoever. And on top of that, with Mike Smith getting hired by the Falcons, you had Todd Downing replacing him. Todd Downing has not been successful as an offensive coordinator in the NFL at all. I mean, he was with Del Rio and the Raiders, and they fired Del Rio pretty quickly after that season ended. That was his one job doing it. Arthur Smith, I think I called him Mike Smith earlier.
Arthur Smith.
Was the offensive coordinator. Arthur Smith was a genius. Great coordinator. He did a great job with what they had offensively. And he got the head coaching job largely on the theme of getting a run-first offense to be that productive and that difficult to play against. Todd Downing is not Arthur Smith. I mean, it's just not going to happen. Yet, Titans are the third seed with the same record as the two seeds ahead of them right now, and they're playing really good football. And that came after Derrick Henry got hurt for an extended period of time. They might get Henry back. That could be the only team that could beat the Patriots or the Chiefs in the AFC. Right. Steelers are not the Patriots and the Chiefs. I don't think the Titans are going to struggle a whole lot. There is something to be said about the style of these two teams, and this is kind of where Vrabel comes in. He's got his team playing some pretty good defensive football right now.
Yeah.
Granted, it was the best time in the world to play a Jaguars team, and that's quite a bit last week. But they destroyed that team.
Right.
They utterly destroyed that team, and he had to have taken his foot off the gas because they could have scored way more than 20 points.
But Jacksonville's really well coached. Just ask him.
Yeah, exactly.
Just ask him.
That guy still has a job. That's not going to end well. I don't know what they're thinking there, but you already spent that money.
You're only spending more at this point. Exactly. But they destroyed that team last week. I mean, it was bad.
Titans are a good team. I really didn't think that they would be, but they're playing good football, and that's not a team the Steelers want to play right now.
Look, I know Tannehill was a first-round pick by Miami, and he had been a wide receiver at Texas A&M, and they moved him to quarterback late in his career, and he ends up being a first-round pick. Why has he had success as an NFL quarterback. He's not awesome and incredible. He's not going to go to the Hall of Fame or anything like that. But why has he been good?
It's impossible, I think, to boil it down very simply. But I think one of the biggest things is he can throw the ball deep, mm-hmm. and they've done a great job coaching to his strengths. And that's why you've seen the Titans have the success that they've had.
That's a good point.
By and large, not entirely, but again, I'll point to Arthur Smith. I think he did a great job with them. Other teams just don't seem to do this very well. And this is why Matt Nagy, here's another one, he's not going to be employed beyond week 18, if not earlier. That's a team that doesn't seem to understand how to set its quarterback up for a high level of success, or at the very least, it waited way too long to figure that out with the guy that they just drafted.
Right.
What Tennessee has done, really, is just take Ryan Tannehill and let him be Ryan Tannehill. Don't try to do more with that. Don't try to be fancy. Don't try to mix things up too much. They have enough creativity within their offense, and they're smart enough to do the things that they can do well and not variate from that. And really what that means, too, is, I know this is a crazy notion today, they're going to run the football, because they can run the football well,
right.
And they can throw off of it. So you're setting up a lot of your offense by being successful running the ball. Problem with running the ball, it isn't overall running the ball. It's when you're not successful, and you can be unsuccessful running the ball a lot easier than you can being unsuccessful passing the ball, because you don't have the upside to it. They can consistently make plays in their running game to set up the passing game. And Tannehill can hit the ball deep down the field. That makes it really hard to crowd the box. And Henry can run wild. He's good enough to be able to see what's there. He's strong enough to drag for extra yards and pick up first down. They've consistently been able to do that. Now, without Henry, Tannehill's had to shoulder a lot more of the burden. A.J. Brown's been hurt as well.
Right.
They haven't had the toughest time of things, but they're still scheming along the same lines. They're good enough to make Tannehill enough to be able to win the game. And they finally found the ability to play defense, fairly consistently at least.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coolong. All right, today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day in the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, and don't forget about gift cards for the holidays. From the Sunbury Motor Studio, I'm Steve Jones. Have a great weekend, everyone.